Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers School of Business at Camden encourages working professionals in the region to take the next step in their career by earning a master's degree. The Rutgers University Professional MBA and the Professional Masters in Accounting degrees are accelerated programs designed for working professionals with classes held on Saturdays in Mount Laurel. An information session is at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, June 4th at the Cherry Hill Library. Details at pmba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, Americans say they're less concerned about climate change. First, the chair of Temple University's physics department has been indicted for selling sensitive technologies to the Chinese government. WHYY's Todd Bookman reports that the defendant faces up to 80 years in prison.
47-year-old Chaoxing Shi is a world-renowned expert in superconductor technology. But it was a breakthrough made by other researchers at a private company that he allegedly copied and sold to entities in China. According to court documents, Shi, a naturalized U.S. citizen, spent a year working at the unnamed American company, during which time colleagues made a breakthrough in the field. A few years later, Shi used Defense Department grant money to license the superconductor device, but under the condition that he could only test it. The U.S. Attorney's Office, however, says emails show Shi repeatedly shared the technology in an attempt to secure lucrative positions in his home country. Shi did not respond to requests for comment. He was released on a $100,000 bond and is due back in court next month. Peter Torin says there have been a wave of high-profile Chinese spying cases in recent years. Torin is a former federal prosecutor, now in private practice. He says the Obama administration is devoting more resources to these types of cases.
The greatest driving force for the U.S. economy is our technology, is our innovation, is our creativity, and they want to do everything to protect it.
Torin says stealing trade secrets is simply cheaper and faster than developing them in your own laboratories, but he adds China isn't the only player to attempt this type of economic espionage.
You know, the United States has, in the past, has engaged in this kind of activity, so it's hard to have a holier-than-thou attitude toward it. It doesn't make it okay, but I think it should be placed in that context as well.
Temple University says it's naming a new physics department chair, but that Shi remains on faculty at this time. For WHYY News, I'm Todd Bookman.
Boy Scouts of America President Robert Gates says that a ban on openly gay leaders is no longer sustainable. At a national gathering of scouts this week, he called for allowing local scout troops to decide for themselves. For one former Eagle Scout who's been battling the ban for decades, that's barely enough, as WHYY's Steve Trader explains.
Back in 1990, James Deal says he was just doing what the Boy Scouts taught him, taking on a leadership role at the Gay Alliance while attending Rutgers University.
There was a footnote on that, unless you're gay. I didn't read that or know that that even existed from my time in the Boy Scouts.
The organization stripped Deal, an assistant scoutmaster, of all his badges and expelled him. He filed a discrimination lawsuit that made it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which ruled against his case. Deal says he was happy when he heard about the changing policy, until he realized that it would still allow local organizations to discriminate if they wanted to.
It's another half solution. The Boy Scouts are very good at sort of not doing the right thing, you know, kind of taking these sort of incremental or baby steps that seem to do more damage than good.
After a bitter internal debate, the Boy Scouts finally permitted openly gay youth to participate in 2013.
I think, you know, 13-year-olds can kind of look ahead and see this organization. You know, I'm gay, nobody knows about it yet, but this organization will expel me when I become an adult because they don't really accept me for who I am, and that's a horrible message to send to young people.
Deal says it was the national organization that banned him and that he received a lot of support in New Jersey. Several local scout councils reached for comment, say they will follow whatever the national policy is. Last year, the Boy Scouts youth membership fell by nearly 8%. For WHYY News, I'm Steve Trader.
Philadelphia is a distressed school district with a high percentage of its students in poverty and in underperforming schools. Democratic mayoral nominee Jim Kenney wants to import a model called community schools to address both problems. But as WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports, turning schools into community hubs takes a lot more than a good stump speech.
On a small plot of land wedged between South Philly High's parking lot and the sidewalk, Ariel Narva works with a 17-year-old named Khalil to turn over the soil in raised garden beds.
So we have escarole and cabbage and onions, collards, kale.
The garden has become a place for kids to congregate during and after school. Thanks to a partnership with the Philadelphia Horticultural Society, it will also give summer jobs to some of the students.
And this bed that Khalil's working on right now, he's sort of like prepping it because we're going to plant all of our tomatoes and hot and sweet peppers, eggplants, all that summery stuff.
Narva works for Sunrise, a nonprofit that runs after-school programs in two sites in the Philadelphia School District. It's one of many partners at South Philly High, which also offers a health center, mental health services, night classes, and more. Principal Otis Hackney says his school has to be different because its students are different.
I understand how this district works and the number of high schools that we have and school choice, what it means to parents, but it also how it concentrates different types of students.
He says there are magnet schools for the academically gifted and art schools for the creative ones. And then there are a lot of neighborhood schools like Southern.
But what it does is it concentrates students of high needs. So if I have a high concentration of students with high needs, I need to make sure I have high levels of support.
This is where advocates for community schools get excited. That term is a broad brush label for putting extra social and educational services for students and families in a school building. The thinking goes that if you can address poverty, adult literacy, and healthcare inside the school, the whole community will benefit. Politicians, including Jim Kenney, like to point to South Philly and Otis Hackney as a shining example.
We need to create community schools, and a perfect example of that kind of institution is South Philadelphia High School and Otis Hackney as the principal, who has taken basically what was a troubled and dangerous school and turned it into a model for educational reform in our city.
Not so fast, says Hackney, who consults for Kenney's education policy team. Changing from a school with a lot of partners to a community school takes more than waving a magic wand, he says.
For us to be truly called a community school, the city would have to recognize it, the district would have to recognize it. But if you ask most folks downtown, you know, whether it be at the district office or at City Hall, they wouldn't say South Philadelphia High School is a community school.
That's because the district has no formal plan for community schools. But the idea has been kicking around for a while. In the 1990s, then-school superintendent David Hornbeck brought more services into public schools. More recently, City Council President Daryl Clark put out his own call for community schools, and local nonprofits have also championed the idea. Historically, though, there are two major stumbling blocks, money and coordination.
We would love it if the City of Philadelphia would want to partner with us in creating community schools.
Marge Neff is the chairwoman of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission. Proponents of the model say it's not expensive, but in fiscally distressed Philadelphia, where would you get the money?
Make no mistake about it, that is not going to replace, that's not going to be in lieu of the money that the schools need.
Neff says grants and partnerships are some ways districts in New York and Ohio have paid for their community schools. But even if money were not an issue, these schools require cooperation between the school district, the city, the teachers' union, and community organizations, groups that can be at odds. Here's Karen Lynch, the district's chief of student services, responding to Daryl Clark's school-based family services proposal at a hearing last year.
We respectfully would encourage the city council to support the school district's current efforts to collaborate with organizations to provide school-based family services and not create a new entity to do the very same.
Now, if you're sitting here today telling me that you're already doing everything, and thank you very much, City Council, we already got that, then I need to see that reflected in some documents or some statistics, because what I'm seeing is, for all due respect, just the opposite.
Politics and education policy can be difficult to separate in Philadelphia. But in the case of community schools, a lot of groups are at least superficially behind the idea. When it comes to bringing these groups together, Democratic mayoral nominee Jim Kenney says he's the guy for the job.
I want to be the point guard of this endeavor, calling the offense, calling the plays, making all the players look good and succeeding as a team.
If elected, he's proposed to convert 25 neighborhood public schools into community schools in the next 4 years. And he says he'll find $8 million to do it. For WHYY, I'm Laura Benchoff.
Turning to this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania's unemployment rate broke a string of three monthly increases last month as employers recorded the biggest one-month jobs gain since February 1996. The State Department of Labor and Industry disclosed today that the biggest increase came in construction, though the payroll figures are preliminary and could be revised next month. The threat of a newspaper strike in Philadelphia has been averted, at least for the time being. The existing contract for employees of the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News and Philly.com was set to expire Sunday. The company that owns the media outlets told employees late today that, at the request of a federal mediator, the contract will now be extended to June 27th. New Jersey lawmakers are asking Rutgers University to cancel planned research involving blasting the ocean floor with sound waves. State Senate President Steve Sweeney and Representative Frank Pallone Jr. wrote to Rutgers President Robert Barchi today, saying testing will harm or kill marine animals, including turtles, dolphins, and whales, and harm New Jersey's crucial tourism industry. Research is due to get underway starting next month. Mostly clear skies, 74 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Let's consider the forecast heading into the holiday weekend for tonight. Mostly clear skies, breezy, low 48 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, Saturday's high 70, up to 80 degrees Sunday under sunny skies. And then for Memorial Day, clouding up with a 30% chance of showers, Monday's high 86. Tuesday, turning partly sunny, high approaching 90 degrees. Still ahead, Jersey Shore business owners welcome warmer weather in full costume.
What more natural mythical creature to open the summer season at the ocean than a mermaid?
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Proudly supporting WHYY is New Jersey's Clean Energy Program. Educating businesses, local governments, schools, and residents how to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing facilities with assistance from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.
Arden Theater Company presents Passion by composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim. A tale of love and obsession, Passion won the Tony Award for Best Musical and boasts one of Sondheim's most lush and romantic scores. Set in 19th century Italy, Passion finds a handsome army captain pursued by a mysterious ailing woman. Opens May 21st. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or ardentheater.org. The Arden Theater Company supports WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. On this start of the holiday weekend, Congress is now in the process of getting out of town for a week-long Memorial Day recess, or as they put it, working back in the home district. Well, let's get to work with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
What do Americans make of Congress not just this week, but 52 weeks a year?
Well, 19%. How's that for a number? That's the current May update. We do it every month on job approval rating for Congress from the American people. It's pretty terrible. We thought it might have gone up because in the past, when one party has taken over control of both houses, as the Republicans did starting in January, we've seen Republicans, or the party that's partisans behind the party that controls both houses, go up in their approval, and that brings everything up. But we're not seeing that. Republicans are just a point or two higher than Democrats now in their approval, still miserable around that 19-20% rate. So that's why we're pretty static here at this very low job approval rating for Congress. And it just doesn't look like it's moving, even though there have been some signs that Congress has been cooperating more on a few issues, at least so far this year. We're just not seeing any kind of change from the American public.
So with that, what's the job approval rating for the Democrat in chief?
President Obama's job approval rating has been holding pretty well in the 45 to 48% range in our Gallup tracking most recently. And then we ask a separate question, just updated that, which is his overall image as a person. That's his favorable rating. Important to keep that distinction. The classic job approval is his performance on the job. The favorable rating is what you think about him as a person, and that's 53%. We just updated that, and that's the highest we've seen for Obama on the favorable rating going back to 2013. So all in all, Obama's not doing badly for this point in time, particularly compared to Bush, where he was back in 2007, because all of his ratings were much lower at that point than Obama's are at this point in his seventh year of his presidency.
The president this week delivered a commencement address to the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. saying that climate change poses, quote, an immediate risk to our national security. Do Americans at large hold that issue in that sort of regard?
They don't. Maybe we need more speeches like that from President Obama and others. We've talked about it a lot before. We just don't see much evidence that the American public is highly concerned about climate change and global warming, no matter how many speeches like that we hear and how many scientists put evidence out. The top problems are dysfunction in government in Washington and the economy. Race relations has come up a little. 8% of Americans say race relations spontaneously is the top problem facing the country, given a lot of our recent incidents. But we look and we look and we look for Americans to tell us it's global warming or climate change. And actually this month, we don't find any mentions at all. It doesn't even round up to 1%.
Climate change to any extent certainly has global implications. And I'm wondering with that, does Gallup survey worldwide about attitudes about President Obama?
Well, the question we ask worldwide in our Gallup World Poll is, do you approve or disapprove of the job performance of the leadership of the United States? We don't put the specific name in, but most likely people are thinking of the president when we ask that. When we put it all together over well over 100 countries where we interviewed last year, at 45% approved, that's actually down some. And there are differences. Interestingly, countries in Africa have the highest regard for U.S. leadership, an average of 59%. The lowest is in Asia, that's down at 39%, Europe 41% approval for U.S. leadership, and in the Americas, North and South America, minus the United States, it's at 44%, about average for all the countries. So not terrible, but not extremely high regard for U.S. leadership when we interview people around the globe.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. As lawmakers consider building a new prison in Philadelphia, some see it as an opportunity to replace the current prison, which is crumbling apart. But for NewsWorks blogger Solomon Jones, it's the city's schools that need fixing.
Late last week, as the mayoral primary barreled toward its anticlimactic conclusion, Plan Philly published a story about a bill that would allow the city to buy land in order to lay the groundwork for a new prison. As I read about the deal, one question gnawed at me incessantly. Why are we laying the groundwork for a new prison, a prison that could cost up to $500 million, when Philadelphia's public schools are forecasting an $85 million deficit? The prison seemed to have been given priority over the schools. And while there appeared to be a rational explanation that the prison would be built with capital dollars that could be borrowed, while the schools needed operating dollars that had to be raised, the schools and the prisons are never separate issues in my view. In fact, the schools and the prisons are forever locked in an intimate embrace. Failing schools feed what's come to be known as the school-to-prison pipeline. Poor and minority children who drop out of such schools are statistically more likely to land in prison. Once they are funneled into prison cells, they fuel a system that churns out broken lives with frightening efficiency. Even when they leave those cells, prison is seared onto their permanent records like a scarlet letter, warning employers not to hire them. Within 5 years, according to national statistics, 3/4 of them return to prison. Then they begin the cycle anew. This is not to say we don't need prisons. We do. In this case, especially, a new prison is a glaring need. The 140-year-old House of Correction, a building that is overcrowded and frightening, crumbling and dangerous, must be replaced at some point. And that's what the proposed new prison is supposed to do. But the schools must be the priority. And they can be, but only if we dare to innovate. Suppose the school district of Philadelphia, rather than returning each year with outstretched hands to address the financial crisis of the day, opened its books for a forensic audit to determine why it's perpetually in the red. Suppose the mayor's office and city council decided that they would conjure a permanent fix more palatable than a property tax hike. Suppose we accepted the reality that 75% of the prisoners in the House of Correction are awaiting trial for up to a year. Suppose we let nonviolent accused wait for trial at a community-based facility. Suppose we, in the community, decided to support education over incarceration, to instruct children rather than house prisoners, to stop the pipeline right at the source. If we had the courage to make such common sense decisions, we wouldn't need funding for a new prison. Instead, we'd be embarking on a new day. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment blog for Newsworks.org. While many Jersey Shore homeowners are still recovering from Superstorm Sandy, beaches and boardwalks are mostly back to normal. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports from Ocean City, where the shore is most definitely open for business.
Each resort has its own way to welcome back seasonal residents and tourists. In Ocean City, it's pomp and circumstance all the way, as the ocean is unlocked with a wooden key and business people plunge into the surf wearing suits and dresses. Businessman Scott Friedman was doing the plunge for the first time, toting a briefcase and sporting a rainbow wig.
An actual real suit with real shoes that you can see if you're looking down and all of that. And I even have my watch on and everything. So, yeah. And then the other guys are showing up with flip-flops and khakis. Not happy about that, but I'm here.
Doug Jewell tried on a pirate's attire and accent since he owns a pirate-themed business.
It was a very cold winter. Had four good weekends, and now the season's starting, so everybody's going to be out here and jumping in the ocean.
There was even a mermaid in the form of Suzanne Muldowney.
What more natural mythical creature to open the summer season at the ocean than a mermaid?
Visitors want to know how the shore weathered the winter. Ocean City Beach Patrol Chief of Operations Tom Molyneux says conditions are good.
We've lost, obviously, a little bit of a sand down here towards the boardwalk area. They're pumping down the south end, and those beaches look great that they're pumping and stuff. But we'll be okay. I mean, it'll be another good summer.
With that preparation done, business owners are left hoping Mother Nature will cooperate with sunny weather. In Ocean City, I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
And finally this evening, most know that William Penn sits atop Philadelphia City Hall, although recently he's welcomed some roommates. Born the first week of May, four peregrine falcon chicks have been nesting atop the landmark with their mom and dad. Now, earlier today, Pennsylvania Game Commission officials used brooms to keep the parents at bay as the baby falcons were bagged, tagged, and brought inside for a quick health checkup. That checkup revealed that the nest contains three males, one female. And after receiving a clean bill of health, the endangered falcons were placed back in their nest atop City Hall, where they'll spend the next few weeks learning to fly. You can view the tagging process far from the angry peregrine parents at newsworks.org. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from Brett Rader and Alex Lewis. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the controls this week, Al Banks and Adam Stanishevsky. Joyce Lieberman is our radio engineering supervisor. Our chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. Chris Cetullo is WHYY's vice president of news and civic dialogue. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, the Cooper Bone and Joint Institute, offering patients comprehensive osteoporosis care. From diagnosis and treatment to education and support groups, their specialists help patients keep their bones strong. Cooper's hospital program for those with fracture has been recognized for quality programming by the American Orthopedic Association. Offices are throughout South Jersey and in Newtown Square. For a consultation, cooperhealth.org/ortho or 1-800-8-COOPER.